Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished professional from Illinois, USA, Mr. Monty Peterson. Monty, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ash. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Thank you. Monty is the principal and owner of the CDA Group, LLC. So, Monty, before we talk about the CDA Group, tell me about your own journey in brief, and what was your motivation to start the CDA Group?
Yeah. So similar to your background, I spent 34 years in corporate America with two global contract management service providers, and you know, for the most part, I had a very good experience. And obviously, you spend that much time with a corporation, you have to be doing something right.
Right.
But towards the end of my career, the business and the industry segment I was in really changed. It was highly commoditized, and these organizations just didn't appreciate what I could do as a manager anymore. And so when I left largely unfulfilled. And so it took me all of about 1 week to decide I'm gonna start a business that's gonna help people deal with what I had to deal with and avoid some of the mistakes that I made. So that was sort of the genesis of the founding of the CDA Group. That's been 7 years now.
Amazing. And does CDA stand for something?
It does. It stands for clarify, deploy, and achieve, which are in execution. Those are the three things Absolutely. That you do.
Well said.
So that's it.
Well said. And so, Monty, when I was reading about you, you used the term business freedom. So my question is, how do you define business freedom, and what is its importance for small and mid-sized businesses?
Business freedom is essentially about business owners, CEOs, senior executives doing what they originally got into business to do, which was, you know, obviously to help people to create a product or service and, you know, disseminate it widely to people, but also to have fun and to make some money. And so I like the concept because it's all about autonomy and flexibility and doing the things that you originally got into business to do as a small business owner. And so I've just always liked the term because I think it's one of the things we need to get back to, that people have become ball and chain to their businesses and they're just not realizing the results or getting out of it what they thought they would have when they got into it. And some are doing that for, you know, 15, 20, you know, 30 years.
Well said. And what would you say, based on all the work that you have done on your own as a leader in corporate America and then as a part of the CDA Group helping so many small businesses, what are some of the common leadership challenges you have encountered?
Well, I encountered quite a bit, you know, from the corporate world. But if I were to take a step back and take a little bit more global approach, I think the most glaring challenge is that organizations don't teach leadership development to their people. Mm-hmm. Here in the States, Franklin Covey, I think, did a survey that said it's an average of 12 years once someone reaches a management level or a leadership level position before they get any leadership training. And so, you know, we're completely blinded because we're working with people on, you know, from their technical abilities alone, and we're not teaching them how to be functional in the job. Right. And the best example of that is, you know, we hire people for their resume experience, right, technical ability, but 99.9% of the time we fire them for an inability to get along with people.
Right.
And so that's just one, you know, that's just one example. But
that's interesting. That's well said.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why I got into, you know, got into the business, and why I like what it is I do, and why it's so important to, I mean, my core business is strategy execution, but I find it so inherently linked to leadership that I end up, you know, helping develop leaders in the process.
Well said. And again, based on the work that you do, what are some of the bad habits businesses often develop that hinder their success?
Yeah, this is a lengthy list, but I would say, you know, one of the most, again, another very, very glaring example is, you know, there's two important activities in every business. You have the day-to-day functionality that you have to manage and operate, and of course the, you know, the fires that kind of accompany those, and that's what most people focus on. But what leaders forget about is, you know, what moves the needle for the organization, what improves us, what helps us grow, what helps us learn. And those are improvement activities. And the day-to-day totally overshadows the improvement activities. And so leaders don't do what's necessary to move the organization forward. So they just, this is part of the reason why they just end up standing still or managing to the status quo.
Well said. You know, a few minutes back, you mentioned that, you know, strategy execution is something that you do a lot of work in. When you look at small and medium businesses, what are some common misconceptions about strategy execution that you have seen?
Number one is probably they don't look at them as two separate disciplines. They're obviously integrated and wholly dependent upon each other, but they're two completely different things. And a lot of people have this impression that if you develop a great strategy, all you have to do is share it with your people, and it's going to happen. You know, which of course we know is fallacy. You need a plan for executing that strategy, and it's something that probably takes 5 to 10 times more the effort than it does to develop the strategy. And if you don't pay attention to that and do it in great detail, then more than likely you're going to struggle. That's probably the first thing. The second thing is recognizing that probably 93% of all strategies change. You know, really emerging strategy is really a better term for it, because as you move along and as you get knowledgeable, you know, and you're working in the business, you know, things are going to change, and how well are you prepared to change? And what I find is most organizations aren't prepared well at all to deal with change, or if they do, they do it minimally, or they do it so slowly that it has no impact.
Right.
So those are a couple of really the bigger things.
Great response. Thank you. And, you know, the other related question for you, Monty, is what do you believe sets apart an effective strategy execution from mere strategic planning? But now everyone talks strategy now.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, but I want to dispel kind of the end part of your question. I don't believe that there is such a thing as strategic planning. I believe that there's strategy and there's planning, and obviously, you know, strategy is thinking about, you know, what we're going to do. It's essentially a theory, right? And we're going to go out and we're going to try and prove this theory in this playing field, you know, on what we're going to do. You know, planning is more related to the execution component, where we have to take that strategy and we have to say, okay, here are the things that we believe we need to do. And here's where we're going to start, and here's how we're going to progress. Strategic planning aside, strategy execution is a discipline unto itself. And if we can't cohesively work as a team and get everybody in the organization connected to what we're trying to do, then we're going to struggle achieving the organization's objectives. Because in effect, what a good strategy execution system or plan or program will do is to align the daily tasks and activities of everybody on the team with what we're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And that way you get people invested, engaged, and fully contributing to what needs to get done.
Mm-hmm. Well said. And would you be able to share any interesting example of strategy execution that you were involved in? And I of course don't want any names.
For example, I have a client in the higher education market who basically he came into this environment and he was asked by his boss, his manager, to put six separate departments together. These were all the you would call them the auxiliary services. They're the functions in a university that make money. So that's the bookstore, dining services, parking and transportation, things like that. And they were six totally separate departments. And he was asked to make them one department and capitalize on synergies and get them working together because they're all for profit motives. So they run more like regular businesses than they do, like the academic side of higher education. And one of the biggest problems that this leader had was getting people to say yes to people, because everybody had kind of, worked in their silos and they'd drawn barriers and they refused to work with each other. And they got to a point where they were sort of selfish and self-oriented versus thinking about, the greater good that what they can do. And through the use of Keenlink and strategy execution management process, he was able to make them a very cohesive and functional group that today, now 3 or 4 years later, is producing at a much higher level, and the whole perception of that part of campus auxiliaries is well thought of on that campus.
Very interesting. And what role does technology play in effective strategy execution?
Well, much like it plays in a lot of other businesses and industries, when you can digitalize something, it makes it more convenient. It makes it easier to use and understand. So from that perspective, software has a value. So for example, the Keenlink performance agreement framework that I work with has a software platform that supports it, but I don't talk about it much because it's the system that I teach the organization that they need to learn and understand. And you can actually do it without the software, but obviously having the software makes it convenient. It's capable of aggregating a lot of data. And it makes the system very, very convenient. Mm. Strategy execution comes down to the little details, and you would have to be able to take copious handwritten notes and share those and regurgitate them across the organization. And when you have a platform, a software platform that acts as a central repository for all that data, it makes it much easier to follow and to use that data when you need it. So it plays a big role, but I try and minimize it because it's what I teach that allows people to execute at the level that they do. And that's what's most critical.
Well said. And you just spoke about Keenlink, and that was my next question. But can you explain the Keenlink performance agreement framework and how does it impact organizations?
Well, I could explain it, but it'd probably take three or four hours. But to put it in more of a nutshell, it's a system that helps an organization manage people at an individual level. So basically, if you start at the top of the organization and you have a set of objectives or a strategy that you're trying to achieve, the system helps to effectively translate at every level of the organization what the people at that level need to do. And so it's this repeatable methodology that's easy to learn and understand. And once people learn it and they do it, it's very, very intuitive. And so, you know, like a lot of tools and processes out there, people come in and they train for them, and then they leave, and then they're quickly forgotten. Well, this is the kind of thing that once you teach accountability, once you understand accountability, and you have a focusing mechanism that keeps you aligned with what your organization's doing, you become dependent on it. Mm-hmm. And as a facilitator, I never leave an organization. So as long as they have my framework in place and they're using it, I'm there. It's my role to embed the framework into their daily pattern of management. It's their job to continue to run the business. And so it's a nice relationship.
Yeah.
Because I can make sure that things are getting done, and I can be accountable to the senior leaders while also helping everybody throughout the organization to use the system to their advantage.
Fascinating. And Marty, how important is employee engagement in the context of executing strategy?
Well, it's very important. It's interesting because I just posted on LinkedIn this morning on that subject. Employee engagement, and again, how people use the term, you know, as an HR driven program or policy, never really gets legs. If your engagement isn't at a high enough level every day with your people, meaning there's trust and respect built between direct reports and managers, and that's pervasive throughout the organization. If you don't have that, it really doesn't matter what kind of employee engagement program you bring into the organization. So strategy execution by its nature is a high involvement, high engagement activity. People are required to contribute. They have a say in what happens on a day-to-day basis and in the long term, you know, with the organization. And now obviously not everybody in the organization touches everything, but leaders get them involved to the point where they understand what they need to do and know they're contributing, and they know that what they do is of value and that leadership wants their perspective. So that's the kind of culturally integrated experience that I think you need if you're going to get engagement at that level where people love the company, promote it, want to stay, and you know want other good people to come into the organization to help them do even better.
Very well said. So time for two or three more questions. Marty, how do you address resistance to change? Based on my experience, most people like status quo or even status quo ante. How do you address resistance to change when you are going through some changes?
Well, it really depends on the kind of change, Ash, that you're going through. Because there's two types in my book, right? There's transformative change, which is the best example I can come up with is, you know, you're renovating your house, right? You're rebuilding your house. Yeah. Whereas transactional change is much simpler, but it's more akin to, you know, wallpapering the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Transformative change can be very painful. And when you think about resistance, it's really not changing that people fear. They fear what's going to happen to them as a result of the change. And so you have to spend a lot of time allaying that fear so that people don't. I mean, anytime you hear change in an organization, what do people automatically think about? Layoffs, cutting costs, you know, this is my livelihood. Mm-hmm. You know, what am I going to do? So that creates the panic. But if you're proactive about it and you're talking to people up front and you're introducing the change early and you're communicating with people directly about what's going to happen and you let them ask their questions, And again, be involved in the process rather than just sort of dictating to them, you know, what your perception is as the corporate leadership, right? And it's easy for the leaders to stand up because they're going to keep their jobs, right? So it's really largely just a matter of being forward thinking in terms of how you work with your people. I have a friend who's famous for saying there will always be resistance until there's none.
Okay. Yes.
And so if you think about things in that term, you think about it from the perspective of, you know, what am I going to do? Because people are going to react differently, or they're going to react negatively, and I should be prepared for that. And again, you want your people understanding what's going on. So if you're undergoing any kind of transformative change, you've got to get a plan together early, and you've got to communicate it often, because under communication is probably another one of the bigger problems that organizations face when they want to change.
Great response. Thank you. And Monty, my last question to you, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation, and a lot of them are either startup entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs. Based on your deep understanding of strategy, what would you say are three lessons you would want a lot of new entrepreneurs to take away?
I would share with them, Ash, that strategy and execution are all about investing in their people. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I think a lot of young entrepreneurs get the people side of the business probably better than people who have, you know, leaders who have been in the business a long period of time. Mm-hmm. I would also tell them that strategy and execution are not the same thing as performance management. Mm-hmm. Performance management is an HR-driven activity. Strategy execution is an operations-owned and managed function. And leaders, it's a leader's role to lead that effort and to manage that, new or old. And then probably the last and the biggest thing I would tell them is that strategy execution takes courageous leaders. Mm-hmm. Because you've got to be able to have those hard conversations, because if you don't, if you step around them, you're delaying your success. You've got to be able to communicate directly and openly with people and let them know if they're performing or they're not performing.
Right.
And a lot of us like to be liked, and that sets us back. So it really doesn't matter how good your idea is, if you can't implement it, if you can't execute on it, you know, there are probably reasons for that. And most of them are probably tied to their, you know, their inability to get people to do, you know, to get a human being to change or do something different than what they're doing today.
Well said. Monty, on that note, and your three amazing lessons, strategy and execution is about investing in your people. Number two, you said, was strategy and execution is not the same as performance management. And third, you said strategy and execution takes courageous leaders because they have to take hard decisions. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own journey, about the CDA group. I learned some interesting things from you about business freedom, about bad habits, about the Keenlink performance agreement, and so many different aspects of strategy and execution. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thanks, Ash. I appreciate it, and best wishes to you as you continue with your mission.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.